Hello, Rob, and it's time for another episode of Press X, the Geek Show's exclusive video game podcast, in which we talk about two topics from the world of games that might be relevant to what's happening now. They might not be. Also, two bits of news. This is the last episode of Press X. We'll be relaunching under a different name. And also, it's three subjects this week, because it turns out having three episodes crammed together for E3 kind of fudges up the running of things. So, on this episode, in part one, we talk about Shenmue and The Bard's Tale, which a blast from the past, and what nostalgia means in 2019 when this was released initially. Second, pure gameplay in the modern age. So when you talk about pure gameplay, you talk about old arcade games. What is that in 20... Well, now, let's not keep referring to the year, because it confuses me with the timeline. And part three is... It's a three-pronged part, this, so it gets really confusing with how many bits this show has. But anyway, part three is about the golden age of games. If there was one, when was it? And that's broke up into games from the arcade era, PC gaming, and console gaming. Oh, a lot I got through there, but I may have mentioned it was the last episode of Press X, but we are relaunching on that new name, but please don't let that put you off giving us a rating or a review on iTunes or wherever you get your podcast from, because that still helps. We'll be naming it something a bit more SEO-friendly, that you can find it a bit easier, which will also help with the exposure, because that's what the reviews are for. So, until the next episode, which I'll be dropping a tiny, tiny little episode which just explains why we're changing the name and what's going to be happening going forward, I'm going to have to hand over to the other version of me, the past version of me, and Rob for the last episode of Press X before the first episode of Something New. Hello, I'm Rob.
And I'm Rob.
And welcome to another edition of Press X. But before we go any further, click subscribe, like, comment below, or join the conversation. Help little channels like us. All in one breath, that was an undertaking. Right. Today, as the title of this video will suggest, we're talking about two specific titles that are blasts from the past. Franchises that have been away for a very, very long time and are coming back with also, big titles this year.
Yeah, but also other franchises that we'd like to see possibly come back from the dead.
Well, we'll get to that point with what we have to say, but yeah. Those titles are Shenmue 3 and Baldur's Gate 4.
No.
What?
The Bard's Tale 4.
Oh, wow, I've got that. Oh, Baldur's Gate, yeah. I was thinking that was Baldur's Gate. That was really wrong.
No, there is another Baldur's Gate coming out.
It's probably what I've mixed it up with. Baldur's Gate has also been away for a while, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has. But The Bard's Tale 4 has been away for 30 years.
We'll get to that one for a second, I think. But first, Shenmue 3.
Yes.
Which I have been playing. My history with Shenmue, I know Rob's got a much more... storied and long history with the franchise, but mine, I played number one, my Dreamcast broke, never got to play number two.
Yeah.
So playing number three.
And where is my history and my perspective is, while number one was the game that opened a lot of people's eyes, number two was the one that made all the fans. And so, from my perspective, going into playing Shenmue 3, I'm coming at it from, and I'm also coming at it off the back of playing the remastered versions on the PlayStation 4.
Yeah, that's fine. I'll be honest, it's one of those things, isn't it? I mean, I had a great amount of fun. I have so many memories of the gameplay systems and what it did and little tells and stories and things you have to do. And just as an experience, I have a very, very vivid memory of what Shenmue was, more so than most any other games. I mean, if you asked me 5 years ago what one of my favourite games is, and I would have put Shenmue on that list.
Yeah.
But now, 2019...
having played Shenmue 3.
I think my memory of Shenmue 1 has actually been diminished by it. Say what you will about the industrial reasons. I mean, there's
I will say what I will about the industrial reasons.
There's industrial reasons, like maybe there wasn't enough money, maybe they didn't have the engine that they wanted, maybe Sony pushed them for time, maybe all of this stuff.
Well,
But at the end of the day, you can only really judge what's in front of you, can't you?
Yeah, I'm not saying that. All I'm saying is that given the opportunity, you know, I don't think any game developer would release a game like that in the state of Shenmue 3 the way it is right now.
I wouldn't describe it as a state. I think it's more in a... I'm contradicting myself here. It's in a state of arrested development, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's exactly the same as those old games were.
And
it's not moved on. It looks better. Yeah, sure, it looks better. But it's exactly the same in mostly important ways.
Yeah, but that's what I mean when I say that. And this is a problem with a lot of franchises that are coming back from the dead. Unless you do a total... Like, look at Tomb Raider, right?
That was a complete fresh reinvention.
Yeah, and what I said and what I've always said about Shenmue 3 is that they need to take it away, do a total rebuild of the game from scratch using the Yakuza engine... Right, and then it would be a fresh new game. And what they could have done was basically release Shenmue 1 and 2 as Kiwami versions, as Yakuza did.
Yeah, what does Kiwami... Right. I don't mind.
I'm just calling it Kiwami because Yakuza used the word Kiwami.
Yeah, it's probably like a re... I don't know what it means, it's not important.
But anyway, redo Shenmue as new versions, rebuilt from the ground up using the Yakuza engine. If they did it that way... Then I reckon they really could have made some really special games, but they didn't have the budget for the engine.
Mm.
Okay, they didn't have the time. I'm curious as to whether Sony actually pushed Yu Suzuki and his development team to release the game this year, because I've heard rumors that he wanted more time and more money to release it next year.
There wasn't. There's no big titles. I mean, the biggest title for. PlayStation and Sony, this is part of the season, has been Death Stranding, but even from the off, even from the first trailers, that has been a divisive property.
Yeah.
Once the game has been released, it's just proven to confirm those fears. So they needed something that's a bit more accessible, in theory.
So,
but we've got to talk about what's the problems might be, what's good about it. You know, we can't just skim over it. We've got to dip into it a little
bit. Yeah, exactly. I think one of the biggest problems is that it's a game made for people who played the first and second game. It's not a game made with newcomers in mind.
There's two perspectives to that, isn't there? I mean, one is who's going to start a franchise at number three. Only the people who played one and two, because it's one of those. It's a saga. You don't start You don't start reading Lord of the Rings on Return of the King.
Yeah,
you could have that debate. But at the same time, the other side of that debate is the generation that played Shenmue. There's been another generation between that, and then it's another second generation. So it's a game which is its time has passed. For that, you got to consider that. That it's so far removed that a lot of the people who used to play that game will stop playing games. So you got to introduce people into this world a bit more gently, and I don't think they've done that.
That's why I said rebuild the first two games from scratch using the Yakuza engine. It would have been a much better approach, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I mean, what Shenmue 3 is, it's a great game for 2002.
It's a great game for people who've basically played Shenmue 1 and 2 and want to continue playing Shenmue as they remember it. It's a great game for nostalgia. The Bard's Tale 4, on the other hand, is
No, let's stick on... we've hardly touched on Shenmue 3. But I think the fundamental problem with it is, for me, is just how stiff it is. It kind of...
Yeah.
I mean, I came from Horizon Zero Dawn to play a lot, so that's probably not the fairest of comparisons, because it's a game which is like a super polished to a game which is very much of its era, even though it's more contemporary. But it's of an era which is gone. But at the same time, the problem with it is just how it's as a comparison piece, as you put two pictures next to each other, playing a very modern game next to one which is of like the late 90s, early 90s, it shows you how much games have moved on. So as a curator's piece, a curator's egg, Shenmue 3 is very, very interesting. It's the same with acting. People uniformly use this sort of tools to which beat the video game industry, with say the stories are really rubbish and it's badly acted. Maybe, but it used to be a lot worse because the voice acting in Shenmue 3 is like when you put a text-to-voice simulator on your mobile, on your computer, and have that read all the script. But it's also good on the respect, on the level even, that it's a type of game which just isn't made anymore. I mean, fair enough, the combat is... It doesn't feel like it has any sort of weight or connection with it.
Yeah, see...
But, at the same time, it's a proper, legitimate story, like a point-and-click adventure, which you really go into it. Yeah, it's not the most detailed or in-depth story, but it's a story that you can really sort of luxuriate in.
Yeah, see, this is where you and I differ on this, right? I actually like Shenmue 3, flaws and all. And I'm willing to forgive it a lot because it's a story that I've been wanting to finish off for a long, long time. Since the advent of the second game and me finishing the second game and then going through all of those emotions, all of that waiting for the story to finish. And yes, I understand there's possibility of more Shenmue games following on. Not getting into that. But for me, Shenmue 3 is more about completion than anything else.
That's fine. I mean, the reason I'm continuing to play it now is because I want to conclude the story.
Yeah.
I don't like leaving story games half done.
Yeah, and that's the truth for a lot of people who've played the original games.
Closure.
Yeah. And this is the thing. I'm willing to forgive it all those issues because I've just come off the back of playing the remastered versions of Shenmue 1 and 2. And
you're in a state of mind for it, the right state of mind for it.
Yeah, the right state of mind for it. And I would say, if you're going to play Shenmue 3, then play the remastered versions of Shenmue 1 and 2 first. But it's a different story with the Bard still.
Yeah, because it's one of those titles that I know of.
Right.
Because it's kind of like one of the old masters of video games, isn't it? It's just one of those names that you might not have played, but it's always been around.
The Bard's Tale 4 is a very interesting case of a dead franchise coming back.
And that was now, a dead franchise.
Yeah. Now, I mentioned Tomb Raider, right? They did a complete reboot, complete remake, overhaul, whatever you want to call it, of Tomb Raider.
They just bought the Uncharted engine, didn't they? Put their game on it.
Exactly. But it was kind of the same with... other games. Do you remember when they came out with Bionic Commando? I'll get to Bard's Tale in a second.
Sort of, right. Yeah.
Bionic Commando was an awful game on the Xbox 360 and the PS3. Awful game.
Hmm.
Right. See, what they did, they basically took a platform game where you had a kind of robot hand that had a grappling hook in it and you could swing around on it. And, you know, it was basically a platform shooting game type thing. And they took that and they tried to turn it into a 3D CG game where you could traverse around the environment with your grappling hook hand.
They did that with, I can't remember the name of it. It was around the time when the PlayStation 3 era Deus Ex came back. Syndicate, was it?
Yeah.
They turned Syndicate from a strategy game into a first-person shooter.
Which was awful.
Yeah, by all accounts.
Right.
Yeah.
And Duke Nukem.
I think Duke Nukem's one of those cases where it's 1,000% nostalgia. I played the old Duke Nukems. I think it was on PlayStation 1, maybe.
Yeah.
They weren't good games.
No, they weren't.
They were not good games. They were toilet humour through and through. They were not good games. So when they brought it back and made it a first-person shooter, badly developed by an unscrupulous developer, I'll just say. It just sort of exacerbated everything which was bad about it. Duke Nukem was a relic of its time.
Yeah.
And it should have stayed a relic. And that's fine.
Yeah, but that's the thing. In comparison to those other games, and even in comparison to Shenmue 3, The Bard's Tale is a special case. For me,
I wouldn't say that Shenmue 3 is a bad example of a game coming back from a long time away. I think it could have went a lot worse.
No, but
I think when you consider that...
That's my point.
But when you consider that from the embers of Shenmue came Yakuza.
Yeah.
And for Yakuza to be this absolute titan now, and you go back to what Shenmue used to be, and it's still what it is. It's just a reminder as how far games have come. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, it's a reminder of how far games have come, but it's also a reminder of how much money and time play a part in the development of games. Because without the money to buy the Yakuza engine for, or license the Yakuza engine for use in the Shenmue game, in the Shenmue game, you're not going to get anywhere.
Well, yeah, but
don't forget, Shenmue 3 isn't a Sega game.
No, it's a Sega franchise, though.
Is it?
Well, they own it.
Do they?
I think. It's complicated.
I mean?
One of those things. It's like, who owns this Chinese martial arts movie? I don't know. The license is somewhere. Someone has it
exactly.
Somewhere.
Exactly.
In the shed or something.
That's my point. Right. Anyway, but I'm talking about The Bard's Tale 4, which I've got a review for it coming out. So if you want to know more about the story, go watch the review. But with The Bard's Tale 4, you have a 30-year gap. Now, you think about the development of video games in that time. We're talking from text adventure and basic first-person perspective.
Commodore and Amiga and...
No, 30 years is The Bard's Tale.
What console or computer would that be?
We're talking mid-80s.
Yeah, I mean, that's Amiga. Amiga and Commodore and Spectrum and stuff like that.
We're not talking Amiga. We're talking Commodore 64.
Yeah, I mean, there were just lines when there weren't a lot of...
Basically, you're going from text adventure and you're going from first-person perspective adventure, right? And we're not even talking Eye of the Beholder level until the later games. We're talking, like, really basic stuff, right? Not high-end graphics, really heavy on the text. And from that, you're going to first-person perspective, dungeon crawler, fully voice-acted, right? With regional British accents and actual proper regional British accents. You're talking about... I wouldn't say it's the best control system. I wouldn't say it's the best combat system, but it works. It's turn-based.
Mm-hmm.
Music plays a big part in it. It has that rambunctious body humour that I always liked about The Bard's Tale, which was kind of lacking in The Bard's Tale 2004, that... I wouldn't say it was an awful game that came out on the PS2 and the Xbox, but it's not really considered canon.
Okay.
But to take what was in the first three games and then bring The Bard's Tale back for a fourth installment in 2018, right, and then have a Game of the Year version of that come out in 2019, that's an achievement. I mean, you basically have to go back and recapture the essence of what made those three games in the 80s, you know, what everybody liked about them, and basically get people of my generation who played those games, get them to buy into it again. And you know what? They actually managed to do it.
It's a hard sell because a lot of your generation have kind of moved on past games.
Exactly. But In Exile Entertainment, I think that they're the ones who developed it, if I remember rightly, but they actually managed to do it, which is the really shocking thing. I mean, I was sold... When the game starts, it starts with this with an FMV of all the things.
There's a blast from the past.
It starts with an FMV of people, and I think they're from the development team.
Was it full motion video?
Which the last time I saw that was in games like Night Trap and stuff like that.
Is like actors doing it.
Yeah.
Like playing at home.
But it's basically this.
Literal human beings, not like graphics or whatever.
Exactly.
And Command & Conquer was very famous for him.
The thing is, The Bard's Tale is one of those games where it's never really taken itself seriously in certain ways, and I think the developers have done that as well, because there's a scene at the beginning of the game where you've got a bard telling a story to a bunch of listeners, where it's clear the listeners they look like people from the development team who've just stuck fake ears and fake beards on. It's so badly done, but it works for some reason. And so, yeah, the game it doesn't hold back on swearing or anything like that. It doesn't hold back on a lot of things, which is what I wanted from Bard's Tale game.
Yeah, but we're going to be talking about both Shenmue 3 and Bard's Tale. I'm doing a review of Shenmue 3 where I complete the game.
Yeah.
From beginning to end, give it a very, very, very exhaustive opinion on it.
Yeah, same with me and The Bard's Tale. But here's the thing, right? There is something to be said for bringing dead franchises back. But I think you really need to be careful with them.
Because you basically have to reinvent them. They can't be the same thing they used to be.
Yeah, I mean, well, they can, but you basically have to do something like the Bard's Tale have done. And you can't really have any, aside from the location and the characters, right? You can't really have any real connection to what came before.
Because it's a new generation who are playing it, and it has to be accessible for that new generation.
So you can't do something like Shenmue 3, which is the unfortunate thing, but you can't.
No, it's... As much as I like the world, it's kind of isolationist.
Yeah. The thing is, like I said, I like Shenmue 3, warts and all, you know? It's still a game for me, and I still consider it a game that I would play repeatedly because I love the story. But I will admit, it's not for everyone.
Oh, no, most certainly not.
Okay. But then again, you've got other games where they brought back the franchise, but rebooted the franchise effectively, like Tomb Raider.
Yeah, I mean, let's run through a few each. I mean, not in any sort of great detail. Yeah. But I'd like to see them properly reboot Silent Hill, but Konami don't really seem interested in making games, so that's not feasible. Legacy of Kain, Soul Reaver, whatever you want to call it.
I'll tell you what, I would love them to reboot the Legacy of Kain series starting with Blood Omen, the original Blood Omen.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be a very hard one to do that. I don't know what else, really. I mean, I'd like to see them bring SSX back, but EA have proved themselves incapable of capturing the soul of what was good about that.
Yeah.
Dead Space, but really, those two I mentioned, the ones that we're going to talk about in a bit more depth in our Dead franchise series.
Yeah.
But you got any picks that you'd like to see come back?
Oh, yeah. Klonoa.
Yeah. It seems to be getting a lot more awareness these days, Klonoa.
Yeah. I'd love to see them do a new Klonoa game. And what was that game on the Xbox One called? The one that was a bit like Jet Set Radio, but with zombies?
Sunset Overdrive.
That was it. Because I'd like to see a new Jet Set Radio game.
Who owns that?
I don't know.
Who made that? Oh, I can't recall.
I can't remember either. I know that loads of people want stuff like Chrono Trigger and stuff like that. I'd love to see a new updated version of games like The Legend of Dragoon or Alundra or something like that.
Alundra was a no bones about it Zelda ripoff, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. But it was cool with it. It was fun with it.
Yeah.
I know that the thing is, they're bringing out System Shock 3, which is already in development, so I'm not going to mention System Shock.
That's another one where they'll have to do a lot of work to sort of reintroduce a lot of people who might have missed it.
Yeah.
And I feel they're warned, but there we go. That's just what it is.
I would like to see a new Silent Hill game, as you said.
But Konami don't seem interested. I mean, if they're not interested, sell it on. Sell it on. Sell on the license. Make some money from it. Move on. Just don't keep these franchises as hostage. There's a reason why channels like Jim Sterling's have things like hashtag F Konami News.
Yeah.
Because they seem to not be interested in the world of games, really, at the moment.
It's because they're into pachinko, because there's money to be made.
But yeah, sell Silent Hill on. Just do the world a solid. You get a lot of money for it. Just please sell it on. Let somebody else have their turn with it now.
Yeah, share the ball.
Yeah.
But I do have one more game.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it's kind of a combination of two games.
Go on then.
Right. Turok.
Yeah.
And Dino Crisis.
Well, yeah, I'll allow that because they are basically, yeah.
Different versions of the same game. Because Dino Crisis 3 was dinosaurs in space, which was not...
Dino Crisis is, oh my God, it's Resident Evil. Oh my God, the zombies are dinosaurs.
Yeah.
That's it.
But
it was fine with that, you know.
I was totally fine with Dino Crisis 1 and 2, and then they did Dino Crisis 3, which was dinosaurs in space, and I'm like, I'm out.
You see, that's okay to me. Dinosaurs in space is okay.
It was an awful game.
I know, but just as a sentence, as a pitch, it's a good one.
Turok, though, is a different matter. Because Turok even has a cartoon series.
Does he really?
Yeah.
It was a Nintendo franchise, though, wasn't it? Well, Acclaim. who have long since died.
Yeah. But Turok, I always thought, was an interesting interesting take on the first-person shooter.
No, yeah, because you didn't. It was ancient history.
So
guns and warfare and whatnot.
I mean, you've got games like Jurassic Park, theme park type games.
Well, dinosaurs are never not popular.
Yeah. So, and they're redoing Resident Evil 2 and stuff like that. Why not use the Resident Evil engine to do a dinosaur game?
Well, apparently they're using that Resident Evil engine to remake Resident Evil 3, which, if you listen to our Resident Evil retrospective episode, we think the much better option would be Code Veronica for the next one. But that's not our choice. Resident Evil 3, fine, fair enough. If they make it better, fair enough. Go on for it. But yeah, that's all we have time for. Do stay tuned to the channel for more of those opinions and hot takes from Shenmue and A Bard Tale. Not Baldur's Gate. I got it right this time. Thanks for watching.
Hello, I'm Professor Elemental, and whenever I'm not riding a badger around my grounds or hitting my monkey butler with a stick, I'm listening to The Geek Show, and my God, I love it.
Perplexed by the pompous, ponderous piffle purveyed by normal art critics? Well, you've come to the right place, because we're not normal. We take a not-so-serious look at the serious worlds of art and literature. Join Sarah, Andrew, Rob and Graham for a piffle-free journey through the cultural landscape of the 21st century. Literary loitering. Because you can't make a cultural omelette without smashing a few eggheads.
Hi, I'm Rob.
I'm Rob as well.
And welcome to another episode of Press X. And before we get into what the episode's about, hit that subscribe button, ring that notification bell, leave us comments and all sorts of good stuff below, because we do need all the help we can get. And so today, what are we talking about today? We're talking about gameplay.
Well, that's a reductive way of doing it. It's pure gameplay. Is there such a thing?
See, I didn't say that. I just said we're talking about gameplay.
That is the clickbait title. Pure gameplay. Is there such a thing? And the reason this is important, right? Well, not important so much. What we're basically asking is, a game which is all about the gameplay, can there still be a thing? Or what is that thing?
I was about to say, how is gameplay not important to a game?
Have you played a David Cage game?
Oh! You don't play a David Cage game.
Have you played a Hideo Kojima game?
Hey! There we go. What's with the finger guns?
Always a room and a place for finger guns when throwing shade on acclaimed movie... acclaimed game makers. There we go. Have you played a Suda 51 game? Oh!
I kind of stopped at Lollipop Chainsaw.
Yeah.
I was just concerned about where the direction he was heading in.
He
definitely harded.
He burned out hard and fast. I killed him with a goof there. Oops.
Right. Oh.
But gameplay, because modern high-profile games seem to be just as much about telling like a cohesive story. And in telling a cohesive story, sometimes the gameplay may suffer. Say what I will about Death Stranding or Metal Gear Solid 5, Phantom Pain, I think the biggest problem with them was the gameplay loops. In the case of Metal Gear Solid 5, it was an open world which was empty. Really played really, really well, but, you know, empty world.
Yeah.
Death Stranding, really well written for Hideo Kojima. I'm using quotation marks there because his scripts are bad. World, but the gameplay is kind of weird and clunky. Same with everything. Games are not so much defined by gameplay and what's in them, but by the systems and how you interact with the world. So really, this video, this Press X video this week, is all about games which not necessarily might have some story. They might have like there's a big bad guy, go and get the big bad guy. But at the end of the day, they're all about gameplay. Pure, honest, Yorkshire bread gameplay.
Yorkshire bread.
It's just a Hovis advert came in my head right there, Rob. I couldn't help it. But yes, is there such a thing as a game which it is purely and exclusively about the gameplay?
Yes.
And I'm going to say this before you go into that, and I don't think it's entirely the domain of pure gameplay, ergo indie games. I don't think it's that cut and dry, because a lot of indie games are very story-driven too.
No, I wasn't going to say anything like that.
The lines in the sand aren't drawn that clearly.
Can I just say, there are plenty of games out there that have just pure gameplay, right? They don't rely on any artifice, they don't rely on any story or anything like that. They are just pure games in the, you know, in the form where you sit down, you play it, you enjoy it, that's it, right? So games like We Love Katamari.
Yeah, well, I didn't think you were going to go with that one immediately out of the gate, but...
But it is pure gameplay.
Yeah, I mean, it's a weird sort of gameplay, isn't it? But when I talk about pure gameplay, I feel it's more in the I can go on it for 10 minutes and it's done, it's finished. And I don't think you can really do that with Katamari, because you've got to sort of clear up this entire place.
Yeah.
And if you're a neat freak, it's a horrible game.
Yeah, it's a horrible game if you're a neat freak. But I mean, the point I'm making when I say We Love Katamari is Katamari isn't an indie game, but if it was released now, it would be classed as an indie game.
Kind of somewhere in between, isn't it?
Well, no, it's just we didn't have the concept of indie games.
It was just a game. It was just a small game.
Yeah, for a long time we didn't have any concept of indie games. So other games, I mean, do you remember Loco Roco on the PSP?
Yes.
Okay, games like that these days would be classed as indie games, but when it came out, it wasn't an indie game.
So, I mean, as far as indie game, no, well, that's wrong term. As far as pure gameplay games go, I think the honest...
Puzzle games.
To God, is the most pure expression of a pure gameplay game is a puzzle game.
Yeah.
There's nothing else to it. It's just solve some puzzles.
Yeah. Puzzle games are one of the big, are basically some of the purest forms of gameplay around, which is, weirdly enough, the reason why Professor Layton games sold so much.
Hmm. Never played one of those.
That's exactly the reason why it was just basically, you go around different towns, talk to different characters, solve loads of puzzles. That's it.
Yeah.
Right? But by the same token, right? But by the same token, there are other forms of pure gameplay that aren't puzzles, but are some of the purest forms of gameplay you can have. And yes, you can play them for 10 minutes and put them down and walk away. Sports games.
I don't know, 10 minutes and go away, but yeah.
What, are you saying you wouldn't just pick up a FIFA game, play one match and then go?
No. Because that's not how my personality works.
Okay.
I've got to have five or six.
See, my personality does work like that.
Yeah. That's fine. But
again,
the principle is the same. That's just my personal perspective.
We're not looking at it from that perspective. We're looking at it from the perspective of pure gameplay. And mm-hmm. they are. Sports games generally are pure gameplay. Ready to Rumble. We were talking about that on...
Yeah, I goofed on a previous PressX and said it was Knockout Kings. I don't know where Knockout Kings come out with. That
Knockout
was like
Kings was the EA one.
An EA sort of very poor-faced, this is a sport, goddammit, sort of approach.
And I didn't even realise that you'd goofed.
But it was Ready to Rumble. Ready to Rumble was like one of my most beloved sporting game memories.
It's a fantastic game.
Everything in the combat sports world when it comes to games is very much, we are a sport. Take us seriously. I don't know whose voice that is. I think it's Nixon, for some reason.
It was Nixon. Do you know the bizarre thing, right?
But Knockout Kings.
Yeah. It was... No, not Knockout Kings.
Oh, I did it again. Oh, no. Right, Ready to Rumble, and Ready to Rumble round two. It was basically, Heroes Around, punch the hell out of the other guy.
Yeah.
You got your special, finish him with your special.
Do you remember Punch-Out? Years ago.
Yeah, was that Mike Nick? Oh,
the one where
Mike Tyson's Punch-Out.
Yeah.
That's what it started off as. And then I think Nintendo took it and just made Punch-Out.
Yeah.
Was that on the Wii or the Wii U?
No.
They brought it back, didn't they, briefly?
They brought it back briefly, but it was back on the, I think it was the NES or the...
Yeah, originally, that's going back. Because there was the long-running gag on The Simpsons, wasn't it?
Yeah. But what was it? See, there was actually a boxing game which I really liked, and a lot of people have never heard of it.
Go on.
Called Victorious Boxers.
That was the Hajimo no Ippo spin-off.
And the reason why I like it is because it doesn't have a health meter.
Hajimo no Ippo, so let's go Ippo.
No, Hajime no Ippo.
So let's go Ippo.
Yeah. But the reason why I like it is because it didn't have health meters or anything like that.
It's very hard to gauge stuff low on that, isn't it?
But that's the thing. That was the key to playing the game. You had to try and gauge your own health and your opponent's health just by eye and by the way they moved.
That was PlayStation 2, that one.
Yeah. And I like it because it tried to do something different and tried to innovate the boxing game in a way.
It did, but besides sports stuff, there's other type of genres which really are just pure gameplay. I mean, one which is dead now, despite Housemarque's attempts to keep it alive, and, well, it's the shmup.
The shoot-em-up. They don't call that shoot-em-ups now, but when we were growing up, side-scrolling and vertically scrolling shoot-em-ups, they were called shmups, okay? Yeah. What you call shmups these days are not shmups.
Did they use that term? Is shoot-em-up still a term? I've not really...
Shmup is still a term, but...
Everything's like FPS now, isn't it?
But that's the thing. That's what they call shmups.
Hmm.
They call the ones that we played, they call them bullet hell. I'm like...
No, bullet... I mean, bullet hell, it's such a weird term, isn't it? It's just a description of how the world treats you. So it's like calling the first-person shooting, guy shooting me.
Yeah.
Sort of game. Or a football game. Ball in the net.
Football in the groin.
It's describing something by... It's like, I've always had such an issue with people calling rap music. It's like calling normal music singing. Well, it's so stupid. It's called hip-hop. Call it hip-hop, goddammit.
The thing is, the way you describe things is, I always found it very much a glass half empty, glass half full scenario, where we used to call them shoot-em-ups, which is actually a very proactive term.
Like R-Type and stuff
even the original ones like Space Invaders and stuff like that. But where we used to call them shoot-em-ups, which is a very proactive term.
Also, R-Type. Yeah. R-Type is hard as balls, that sort of game. In its old form, it was the hardest games. They were horrible.
Yeah, they were. But now they call them bullet hell, which I think is a very... Bullet hell is a very negative term.
It is. It suggests that it's kind of hopeless.
Yeah. And I never liked that term because I've always enjoyed playing shoot-em-ups. I have...
They're not really good for you, though, are they? They're the sort of game where you get so into it, you stop blinking.
Yeah, they're not good for you.
That's sort of a consistent theme. With a pure gameplay game, you'll be so into it, you will stop blinking. That's just how it is.
But also, again, pure gameplay, when we're talking about pure gameplay, fighting games.
I mean, before that, I think the number one game you always have to talk about when you talk about something which is gameplay and nothing else is Tetris. That was the one which really made gaming, really.
Yeah, but I mean, Tetris falls under the category of puzzle games.
Yeah, I know, but I was just picking out a title.
Yeah.
There's many, many puzzle games. You brought up Professor Layton, I just brought up Tetris, that's all it is.
But I mean, fighting games, again, are pure gameplay.
Not so much nowadays. They have decided to pick up a story these days.
No, not quite.
Well, they have, yeah. I mean, Mortal Kombat, it used to have arcade mode, let's call it. An arcade mode, you picked one character once upon a time. You pick one character and you played through, it's 12 levels of bad guys resulting in the big bad at the end of the game. You went through all of the characters, you did that. But now, in Mortal Kombat new ones, it's here is a story and you will play a different character each level. Which, again, it's showing a shift in how...
I wasn't talking about Mortal Kombat.
I mean, I'm just using an example. I think Tekken does the same too, but...
It's
the way that the AAA fighting game is now packaging
itself.
I'm
not talking about them.
That's all I'm saying. I'm
not talking about them, though. What I'm talking about are the other fighting games, stuff like BlazBlue, Guilty Gear.
BlazBlue is still super story heavy.
No, they've got story...
Story heavy, I'd go as far as saying.
Well, they've got story, don't get me wrong, but it's not as intrusive as games like Dead or Alive or Tekken or Mortal Kombat.
Honestly, I think fighting games are a really controversial thing when you're talking about pure gameplay, because there's very few of them which still are it, because the story is really sticking its oar into that genre.
Yeah, but that's the thing. There is a single-player mode in fighting games where you can just play the game.
Oh, no, I know, but the money of that game is put behind the story.
No.
Well,
I mean, if that was the truth, if that was the actual truth, then the story in Dead or Alive would make some kind of sense.
Well, it will. Somebody.
No, it doesn't.
The guy who wrote it in his underpants made note of what everything means and what it says. And what he's trying to say about the world in his underpants.
What kind of allegory is that?
I don't know. Fill in the blanks yourself.
Don't do that. This is Dead or Alive we're talking about.
I'm just opening doors so for people to walk through them themselves.
Anyway, back to gameplay.
Yeah.
I mean, we've covered a lot of different types of game.
It's very hard, isn't it? Because games have become more and more cinematic. Hmm. The older medium they've got. It seems like my generation is the perfectly... games seem to be entwined with my generation. So as I've got older, the games have seen them mature.
See, the
Because the people of my generation, let's just say 30s, they grew up with games becoming the major thing you are. Your generation, I'm not going to say how old you are because it's not polite to bring up somebody else's age.
I'm 44.
But your generation was the generation before games really exploded out into any sort of world. So my generation, so as my generation's got older, it seems like games have matured with me.
Yeah.
And where I just want Streets of Rage. I just want to play Streets of Rage, but the world says, no, but this story is so immersive, and it's been so many things. The
thing is, Streets of Rage had a storyline.
Yeah, there's a bad guy, let's go and punch him. Yeah. Golden axe. There's a bad guy, let's hit him with an axe and ride on an ostrich or something.
A bad sorcerer.
That's what it used to be once upon a time. I want my games to be simple. I just want to play a game. I don't want a story, I just want the game. And that's what motivated this fame for
me. But I mean, there's one type of game that we haven't mentioned, and I feel that we should at least acknowledge that the older types of game, and this is reflected in the indie game market, the older types of this game genre still retain quite a lot of pure gameplay, but the more modern, especially the AAA ones, are, well, as you said, story is intruded a lot more. Platform games.
Yeah. I don't know how alright, I think that's pretty pure. Rayman, that was pretty pure, but
yeah.
The more high budget you get, the more story-driven it becomes.
Is Mario still a pure platform game?
Pretty much, yeah.
And the new Mario was great, don't get me wrong.
Mario isn't really a story-driven guy, is he? So, a princess got the...
That's my point.
Why, it's a me, a Mario, it's just a stereotype. Yeah, well,
that's what I'm trying to say. everyone questions why Mario continues to be so popular, right?
Yeah.
And
because it's pure. It's just pure stuff.
That's the secret. And if you want to replicate the success of a game franchise like Mario, I think
keeps Mario fresh as well, is it? And it's basically like the Chris Jericho of video games that's constantly reinventing itself.
Yeah.
I went with Chris Jericho there. I'm not using other touchstones, which I could have, because that'd be bad.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's constant reinvention, constant pure gameplay.
Yeah.
And I think, genuinely speaking, as far as Nintendo goes, and they're good franchises anyway, I could bring up bad ones, but I'm not going to open that kind of worms, because this is the internet, and Nintendo fans have a taste for blood. Nintendo tend to be a lot more pure on the gameplay side of things.
They do, and that's reflected in other games like Super Smash Brothers, Mario Kart.
Yeah,
you know, other games like that. They tend to. What I like about Nintendo, okay, I wouldn't say I'm a fan of Nintendo, but what I like is their willingness to innovate.
I'm Nintendo agnostic.
Nintendognostic.
You're just getting yourself into a boat.
Nintendognostic.
Yeah, there we go. But yeah, I really like Nintendo, but you have to take the good with the bad, I think. Nintendo. The good of Nintendo is they are really flying the flag for games to just be games, and there's a place in the world for companies like that.
Yeah,
there's more. There should be more of them, frankly. Well, I think Nintendo are really leading by example of what they want games to be, and it's really sad that others aren't following them and their example.
The great thing about Nintendo in terms of the pure gameplay aspect is that it's reflected in their hardware.
Yeah.
You know, the simplicity of a console like the Switch, okay, granted there may have been similar designs and design principles to the Switch, But nobody implemented it in the same way that Nintendo did they? No. And so, from that perspective, Nintendo have basically changed the market.
Yes.
So, for me, if you look at the Wii is still one of the biggest selling consoles of all time.
I think it's either first or second to PlayStation 2. It's in the top.
But why? Because a lot of people I speak to, a lot of gamers who seem to feel that they're the gatekeepers of video games, but a lot of them seem to feel that the Nintendo Wii isn't a games console. And I'm like, yes, it is.
Of course it is. Your mobile phone's a game console.
Yeah.
Well, but, no, I mean, a console, you know why? But it's a games machine.
Do you know why they don't consider it a games console? Because Grandad could play the Nintendo Wii.
It's elitism.
Yeah.
Elitism doesn't make something what it isn't, you know.
See, I think the Nintendo Wii is an amazing console because it was so accessible.
Yeah, I'm a big metal fan. But yeah. Just because I think baby metal are trash, it doesn't make them not metal. They're exactly. Still metal.
Exactly.
Whether I like it or not.
Yeah. I think that's a good place to end.
Yes. Thanks for watching. See you next time.
This is Sonny Strait, the voice of many of the voices that you grew up on. Yes, I raised all of you ungrateful bastards, and you're listening to The Geek Show. Kamehameha, bitches!
Unsure if your Spider-Man is amazing or spectacular? Infinitely confused by Crisis on Infinite Earths? Or does the mere thought of X-Men continuity make you tremble? Then 4Panel is the podcast for you. Join me, Andrew, and my co-host Robin Mick as we guide you through the weird and wild world of comics. We'll talk about the secret origins of your favourite characters, delve into the craziest events of comics past, and review the hottest new graphic novels that you might have missed. That's 4Panel, a part of the Geek Show Podcast Network, available wherever podcasts are found.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Press X with me, Rob.
And me, Rob.
Before we get any further into it, though, click like, subscribe, comment below, help the channel out.
Help the channel.
So anyway, today, last week we talked about pure gameplay. Is it such a thing? What type of games might it be? So a natural, I wouldn't say natural, but I'm going to describe it as
no,
that.
It is actually a natural progression from that.
Yeah, but this time we're talking about if there was ever, you talk about comics, there's a golden age of comics, there's a silver age of comics. There's a golden age of Hollywood, but there's debate about when that might be. For me, it was New Hollywood in the 1970s, but that's not what we're talking about today. So, extending it to what this series is about, video games, if there was a golden age, I don't know what word I said there, but if there was a golden age of video games, when would it be?
Well, I think before you even define golden age of video games, right, I think you have to do a bit of, what's the word I'm looking for? A bit of compartmentalization, right? Because for me, there's three actual separate things. There's the golden age of arcade games.
Ah, right, he's really breaking it down now, yeah.
There's the golden age of console games, and there's the golden age of PC games. Or actual computer games, I should say. Right.
Yeah. Do you want to go through one by one then?
Yeah. Because the thing is, everyone keeps saying the golden age of video games. We're living in a golden age of video games. I'm like, well, yeah, but what about arcade games?
Okay, let's just go. Start with arcade games first. Then, yeah. Since you,
because that's the first golden age, isn't it?
Well, that's the thing which really launched games into the mainstream.
Yeah.
There was a arcade once upon a time, believe it or not, younger viewers and listeners. Once upon a time, every town used to have one. Oh, isn't it? Well, any decent-sized town. I'm not going to say every single town, because that probably bite me in the bum.
Yeah.
But, yeah, every decent-sized town had at least one arcade.
Yeah, one video game arcade, where the kids used to spend their hard-earned cash.
Now, I think Japan really is still behind it, but they're as good as dead in the UK, and they're as good as dead in America as well.
There's a couple of places in America where you can still find the legacy of them.
It's not really the thing anymore. It's more sort of an archival thing than actual.
That's what I mean.
Active.
That's why I said you'll still find the legacy of them. But
experience. Yeah,
there's still active experiences in places in Japan. You can find a few places in Korea and China that still have them.
Yeah, because
that's pretty much it.
gaming in Japan's weird. They've gone away from consoles and home ownership to more mobile stuff, haven't they?
Yeah. Well, years, that's so. The same with Korea and China as well.
Mm.
But arcade games were, when you get right down to it, arcade games basically kickstarted the entire video games industry.
PC games existed before that, but it was a super, super niche thing.
Well,
no, actually, because arcade games go back to the 70s, don't they?
Arcade games came first.
Yeah.
PC games, because you've got to remember, PCs, in order for PC gaming to be a thing, people had to own PCs.
Which, home gaming was kicked off by the PC.
Home gaming, home gaming was kicked off by stuff like bat and ball.
Well, let's not get into that, because you're showing your age there.
I used to have one of those, right?
That's dating you really badly.
I used to have one of those grandstand machines that you plugged into the TV with the dial controller.
I mean, the only really golden age you can do it is, I'd say, '87 to about '94.
I'd say the 80s in general were the golden age of arcade games.
Yeah.
I'd say for the majority of the 80s.
Because the thing that sort of confused you into thinking that arcade games would have a much longer life was the fighting game. The fighting game was a real final hurrah for the fighting game. But that sort of fizzled with like the PlayStation 1, and then basically killed the arcade.
Let me put it like this, right? My first experience when I went to a video game arcade, right? Very, very early on. Was the Star Wars wireframe game with the? And I remember I was still really very young at that point, and I remember sitting there and being blown away by these wireframe graphics.
Yeah,
right. That was what it was, and I was doing. You know, I was playing this Star Wars game, and I had the joystick controller, and it was this massive thing that I had to sit down in. With the joystick controller, and I was shooting the TIE fighters down on my way to the Death Star because it was about the first movie, and then I was doing, you know, the trench run, and I was trying to shoot everything down and kept dying and kept going, Mom, I want another go, Mom, I want another go, and my mom's going, you've had your go, clip around the back of the head.
Yeah. For me, though, I mean, that's fine for you, because when it comes to Golden Age, I think, personally, you can sort of measure it academically with comics.
Yeah.
But for video games, I think a golden age is defined by the year or the years or the period where you have the fondest memories.
Well, that then makes the golden age very subjective.
Yeah, I don't think you can do it quite as objective.
I think you can if you look at sales figures.
Well, yes, but that's a much different video than what this is, isn't it?
This is true.
Personally... I know, obviously, I have to word it this way, but personally, I think a golden age is defined by when you had the best memories and the most fondness for that thing. And for me, it has to be just before the PlayStation. I mean, I didn't have a lot of money growing up, so PlayStation 1 was released, say, 1995. I didn't get it until about 98. So... I had to do with arcades then, so I say about 1995 was when the arcade was really, really hot stuff for me. You know, the light gun games, like House of the Dead. I cannot tell you how fond I am of that
Time
thing.
Crisis.
Time Crisis, Virtua Cop, stuff like this. I think the games are worse off for not having light guns, so that tells me how much of an affinity I have for that era of arcade gaming. So for me, that is the golden age of the arcade.
I mean, it wasn't just the light gun games. You had the driving games as well, like Chase HQ.
Yeah, they were terrible. When you actually sat on the bike.
No, I said Chase HQ, the driving games, not the riding games.
I didn't like the
Super
the
Hang On
one.
Is what you're talking about.
I didn't
about.
Like the bike one where you're sat. It's sort of a very clunky movement.
Yeah,
from
Super
left
Hang
right.
On, that was Super Hang On.
Yeah, I didn't like that one.
So but I'm talking about the driving games like Hard Driving and... what was the other one?
So
Test Drive was the other one.
So basically what you're talking about is, for me, the golden age of the arcade one games is when it had like, it wasn't just a stick and some buttons. It was something other, a peripheral which you interacted with the game.
Well, see, you remember Afterburner, right?
Yes.
Afterburner was basically something from my generation, whereas G-Lock was something from your generation. Right, G-Lock is the game that I got stuck upside down in. right?
Yeah,
and I've told you the story before.
There was a lot of machines that you had to climb into in my generation.
Well, yeah, this is the thing. It was a totally different thing where Afterburner, I had to climb into and sit there, and it would go, and it was basically like, oh, yes, I'm playing Top Gun. Oh, I'm so cool. Call me Maverick. But then G-Lock came out, and they had it in the Trocadero in London, right? And I was wearing a jacket at the time, and I got stuck upside down because I had a sheet sensor over the opening, and because it was a gyroscope, right?
That's funny.
Because it was a gyroscope, my jacket fell into the opening, and I got stuck upside down. And I'm going, what's going on? Why am I stuck?
How long were you stuck for?
About 5 minutes.
I was hoping it'd be a really embarrassing story where we were stuck for hours and you had to get the fire brigade out to cut you out.
No, because we figured out what was going on. Thing is, as soon as I pulled my jacket in, it started up again and scared the crap out of me.
Okay, so that's my answer, which is the age of the arcade where it had like something where you interacted with the game rather than just buttons and a stick.
Yeah,
so for you?
For me, with arcade games, I've always loved arcade games and I've always missed arcade games because for me...
It's basically the cinema of gaming, isn't it?
Well, it's not just...
No, cinema is a communal experience. Yeah, you all share
it. I was actually about to say that. It's not so much the cinema. It was the social side of video games where you could go and... it's basically... You remember the theme tune for Cheers? Sometimes you want to go where everybody knows your name.
The reason why
that was the video game arcade for me.
The reason why you bring up cinema is you watch a horror movie and a horror movie is elevated immensely by sharing it with other people.
Yeah, but that's my point.
That's what I was referring
to. Yeah, I know, but that's my point. The video game arcade was like the Cheers bar. Sometimes you did just want to go somewhere where everybody knew your name. And for me, growing up, that was the video game arcade.
Okay, that's fine. I mean, we've got to do it in a very personal level, this video, because we can't do it on an academic level.
I don't care about the sales figures.
Yeah. So, right, I think moving on.
I just mentioned them to acknowledge the fact that they do exist.
Of course they exist.
So,
which I think are probably the peak of gaming in all regards right now, as far as sales figures, is probably now.
Yeah. But so, moving on to consoles.
Now, PC, I think we can...
No, let's not touch on PC yet. PC is a special case.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think the golden age of PC is now as much as people would like it if it believe.
No, well, like I said, PC is a special case. We will get to PC. But let's do consoles first.
Okay.
Because consoles, when you talk about the golden age of consoles, right, I think the golden age of consoles was the PlayStation 2 era.
I was going to say exactly the same thing. Because for me, I don't know about for you, but for me, that was when games were most rich, the most varied.
Yeah.
All genres were alive and kicking. Big budget games, small budget games, medium budget games. Every conceivable taste was catered to. It was a buffet. I hate buffets, but I'm using it as an analogy.
Yeah, but
it was a buffet for all games of all types.
Not just that. It was the point in time where games were the most accessible they've ever been because of consoles like the Nintendo Wii.
That was after, though, wasn't it?
It was during.
The Wii was not the same generation as the PlayStation 2.
No, because it overlapped with the end of the PlayStation 2, didn't it?
No, it was PlayStation 3, wasn't it? PlayStation 2 was the same generation as the Xbox, I think Nintendo 64.
No, because the Wii U was the one that overlapped with the... With the PlayStation 3 and the PlayStation 4, and the Nintendo Wii overlapped with the PlayStation 2 and PlayStation 3.
If that's the case, the Wii is a lot older than I remember it being.
I think it is.
I think you better look that up before making statements on the internet. You know what the internet's like? It remembers, Rob. It remembers. It has Wikipedia in its hand. It knows. It's a sentient being, the internet. It knows all. It knows everything. Please don't comment below and call Rob out on his nonsense, because I'm keeping all of this in. I'm not editing any of it out. He's keeping his fumble, if he's fumbled here, of course. And I'm just rambling on, buying him time as he clicks clacks on his keyboard. Did he fumble? Did he not? We shall find out.
PlayStation 2. Released originally in Japan, March 2000.
Well, right? PlayStation 2 was?
Yeah,
March
2000. And so, yeah, it had... 155 million units shipped as of March the 31st, 2012.
Yeah, that's the biggest console ever.
Yeah.
compared to about the 100 million
Nintendo the Wii. Has, yeah. Oh, yes.
Well, he was right.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Nintendo Wii, November the 19th, 2006.
So it was back end of the PlayStation 2.
Well, the PlayStation 2, it came out about the middle of the PlayStation 2. And it went all the way to...
weird, a lot older than I thought it was then. That's really weird.
Yeah. Lifespan 2006 to 2011. So basically, Nintendo Wii lasted for about 11 years. Was it 11 years? 2006 to 2017.
Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah, whereas the PlayStation 2 went for 13 years, 2000 to 2013. So I was right.
Yeah, well, okay, fair enough.
But like I said, that's one of the reasons why I always considered that era to be the golden age.
The weird thing is I wouldn't include Xbox in that conversation.
Yeah.
But PlayStation and Wii, yeah, fair enough.
Well, they pretty much made it...
PlayStation 2 and Wii, sorry.
Yeah, they pretty much made it the golden age between the two of them.
The reason why I would use that as the example is because you could, I think as far as amount of industry-changing classics, the PlayStation 1 has the PlayStation 2 beat. But if you went back to play those PlayStation 1 classics, they don't hold up in any way, shape or form.
Yeah, but the thing
is... But in the PlayStation 2, those games have held up.
The bizarre thing is, that's exactly the same... That's exactly the same story as Nintendo. The number of from the PlayStation 1 era, right? Because everyone thinks the GameCube was the PlayStation 2 era console. Everyone thinks the GameCube was the PlayStation 2 era console. That's what the PlayStation 2 was up against. But it was but in the latter days, it was up against the Wii. Because the GameCube, again, see, Nintendo have never released consoles in the way that the other companies have. They've always kind of released them. See,
they're a very rebellious company that sort of say, you're having your generation days, these to these. Well, we're not. We're changing it.
Yeah.
And the Switch is, again, a key example.
Exactly. I mean, from the N64 onwards, Nintendo have never played ball with console releases the way that everyone else does them. There were loads of classics that changed the game on the N64. There weren't as many on the GameCube.
No, the GameCube was kind of a flub from Nintendo.
I wouldn't say it was a flub. It's still a good console.
No, it's still a good console, but it was, compared to the previous ones, it was a bit of a...
It was a bit of a dud.
A bit of a drop ball.
But the Wii... See, Nintendo seemed to have this bizarre thing.
They changed the game industry with it, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. But Nintendo have this bizarre thing lately over the past few generations of consoles where they'll release one amazing one and then one dud.
So the next one should be a dud after the Switch.
Yeah, if they keep the trend going. Because from the NES to the SNES, that was fine. From the SNES to the N64, that was fine. But then after that, it just seemed like, you know, we have to do this. This is the only way we can progress.
So N64 was a success, was it? It was
reasonably.
The GameCube was a flub.
The Wii was a major success.
Wii U was a flub. Switch was amazing.
Do you see what I mean?
So the Switch U will be a flub. But yeah, I agree with the PlayStation 2 because, frankly, if I would do a list of my top 10 games, I'd reckon about 8 of them are on the PlayStation 2.
Yeah.
So I can't lie to that statistic there.
Yeah. Well, not only that, the PlayStation 2 introduced us to so many different genres of gaming that we probably wouldn't have played. Because if you look back at the PlayStation 1, the majority of games that people played on the PlayStation 1, they would never pick up a lot of the Japanese imports, for example. The horror games were another thing that they wouldn't really go for. Aside from Resident Evil and Silent Hill, they wouldn't go for other games like the Fatal Frame games or anything like that. Oh, sorry, Project Zero, since we're in the UK.
People know both names.
But you see what I mean?
But so I think we have to address now as a potential candidate. We've got to give reasons why it isn't the golden era. And I think it's because of industry attitude.
Yeah.
Whereas in the PlayStation 2 era, so that was early noughties.
It was a lot more open.
It was more open, more honest, and it wasn't trying to achieve all of... Like, again, some money, then more money, then all the money.
Yeah.
EA was a very upright company. It didn't have the sort of synonymous where EA are evil, like people believe they are now.
Yeah.
It didn't have things like microtransactions. It didn't have all of these really, really...
Basically, money didn't...
Horrible little motivation. Yeah, anything.
Basically, money and greed didn't ruin it.
You didn't buy a game on day one and it needed a patch.
Yeah, you basically bought complete products. And I think one of the biggest problems and one of the reasons why I don't consider this modern era to be a golden age, whereas some people might, because we have esports and things like that.
We have a lot of classic games, no disputing that, but yeah. Still.
I don't consider the modern games era to be a golden age because for a golden age to exist, for me, you have to have completed pieces, right, being released to the public like it's always been. No one's going to release... All right, if I was an author and I released a half-finished book to the public... Is that going to be called a masterpiece?
No, just call it episode one.
Exactly. Do you see what I mean?
And then release episode two with it.
So that's how I look at it. If you're releasing half-finished works...
I'm not going to just say the fact that I hate gaming now because other generations are better. I just think previous generations were more honest and pure about what they were and what they were putting out.
Which leads us to PC games.
Which isn't ironically, now, I don't think.
Right. See, here's the thing. I am waiting for the... PC games are literal computer games, right?
Yeah, I think the golden age for me for PC games, this is talking from the outside in... I'm cocked this up. The outside in, I think the golden age for PC games was the 1990s when you had companies like LucasArts and the strategy game and the point-and-click adventure and... The Western RPG was really alive and kicking. I think that, for me, was the golden age of PC gaming.
See, this is the thing. You've never actually played...
Outside in, that's what I'm talking about.
That's the thing.
An outsider's perspective, that's my take.
But that's my point. You've never played computer games. And when I say computer games, I don't mean video games. I mean games on a computer.
You want to try and say that again without being condescending?
I am going to be condescending because a lot of people haven't. Okay, and when I say games on a computer, see, this is where people get it wrong. They assume PC gaming means games on a PC, a personal computer. Take that literally to mean any personal computer. Commodore 64, Commodore Amiga, Atari ST. Yeah, but that's my point. ZX Spectrum. So PC gaming has already had a golden age, which was... the late 80s, early 90s.
Well, that's, again, it's all personal perspective, I think, in that one.
But PC gaming will have a second golden age.
It's had one, the one that I referenced.
No, not that one.
Okay.
Okay. I wouldn't class that as a golden age. See, for me, it's similar to how we class the PlayStation 2 golden age, because you had the Nintendo Wii and you had the PlayStation 2.
This is going to be a controversial opinion. But I think there's not going to be another PC golden age because of barriers to entry. It's not where you get... in the case of a console, you get a console, you put a game in, it works.
Mm.
In a PC game, you have to have the exact right setup because some games are optimized in good ways, some games aren't optimized at all.
See, this so is where the, I disagree sort
of
with
the,
you.
The uniformity of what you need to actually get a good game running can... It's basically like an addiction. You have to keep on adding to it, keep on upgrading, keep on expending on it. And that is a very, very big wall in front of something being classed as sort of like the peak at what that game's industry or what that game platform can deliver. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, this is where I disagree with you on this one. There is a very specific reason, but we'll get to that in a second. Speaking about the first golden age, right? The first golden age is basically the crossover point between computers like the Atari ST, the Commodore Amiga 500, and the PC. When you had companies like Ocean and US Gold and the original form of Capcom, Electronic Arts releasing games like Populous and, I can't remember. Or was it... I think it was when Peter Molyneux was just starting out... when he made Populous. You had all of these different varied types of games. You had point-and-click adventures. You had first-person adventures like Eye of the Beholder. And you had this diversity of games that were just on computers. They weren't on consoles. because at that point, the only consoles you had were the Sega Mega Drive, sorry, the Sega Master System, and then the Mega Drive, and the NES and the SNES. That was it. Those were your console options. And that's why I'm saying that was a golden age at that point, before the PlayStation 1.
You can't have more than one golden age, though. It's kind of defined against...
See, I think that there is a second golden age coming for PCs, and it has to do with indie games. I'm not talking about...
Well...
Do you see where I'm going with this?
Kinda, yeah.
Right, because...
I'm not saying it's not a good time for indie gaming. I think indie gaming is leading the charge for making games what people actually want, rather than what shareholders...
My point, exactly.
Rather than what shareholders want. But at the same time, you can't ignore the fact that there's a very, very big barrier to entry when it comes to PC gaming.
Yeah, there is a very big barrier to entry. And if they can resolve that barrier, then I think that indie games will lead the charge for a new golden age for PC games.
You know how I think? This is a wrestling analogy. WWE is basically the AAA game.
Yeah.
AEW, All Elite Wrestling, set up by wrestlers for wrestlers, was kind of like, we don't like the way that's doing. We reckon we can be better. We'll do better. Say what you like about each company. Each company has the pros. Each company has the cons.
Yeah.
But AEW is by wrestlers for wrestlers.
Mm.
So translating that over to games, indie games are games by gamers.
Yeah.
Rather than games for shareholders.
Yeah.
And yeah, I do believe that indie games do lead the positive side of gaming like that. But at the same time, it's very difficult to enter indie games on the PC market.
Well, there is a reason for that, and again, we come back to the money and the greed.
I know you can't blame the games on the games. That's not the games' fault. That is the industry's fault.
It is the industry's fault. The barrier for indie games on consoles is far too high. It costs too much money to develop indie games for consoles, whereas it's much easier to develop, and there are also loads of tools available to develop games on a PC.
Yeah, of course.
And that's the main reason why you have more indie games, so many more indie games on a PC than anything else.
But the problem there's too many indie games, so a lot of things are drowned out, which is why a lot of indie games are moving to Switch, because they can actually have some sort of exposure, some sort of preferential treatment, rather than your one indie game on a sea of hundreds of thousands on Steam.
See, this is the thing, dealing with the indie games market as we do, one of the things I've noticed is that they are getting released on the Switch, but they're also getting released on the PC.
Oh, of course, you know? But
that's all they're getting released on.
Yeah,
you know, and see that that then highlights the fact that it's much harder to develop indie games for.
Yeah, I really want to play Untitled Goose Game, but I need a Switch.
Yeah,
I know it's an odd game to sell a console on me, but it's what it'll take.
The weird thing is, right? Over these last few episodes, you and I aren't Nintendo fans, but we've really bigged up Nintendo a lot over the last few episodes.
I think Nintendo's biggest problem... I mean, I think it was College Humor or Saturday Night Live or something in which they talked about anime. Oh, anime is great, but the fans are making it an inhospitable... inhospitable place to get involved
with. Yeah, it was College Humor.
I think Nintendo are kind of the same.
Yeah.
They're very territorial as fans. Because they're kind of not really accepted or embraced by mainstream gaming culture, so it's kind of industry has made them that way. But at the same time, it's a very hard place to go into being a newcomer.
Yeah.
I'm not saying you're a Nintendo fan. You're scum. You're a Nintendo fan. I'm not saying anything like that. Don't twist my words. It's just the industry has made it like that. So it's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah, I mean, I think if I had any message to give to fans of any game, it'd be just this. Just relax. It's just a game.
Oh, there we go. There's flame words. People don't like being called that. Their stuff described as that.
But that's all it is.
Yeah, I know. But
take it from one who's been playing games for almost 40 years.
I know, that's understandable, but you... Every story has two sides, that's all I'm saying. But anyway, yeah.
All I'm saying is, as one who grew up being bullied and beaten for playing video games and being called a geek, people these days have not been through the things that I went through when it came to playing games. If I was, I went to school, talked to my friends about games.
Add the list, you can't hear this. He's also Asian as well, so we're talking about a generation where super racist.
Yeah.
And sort of have, you're a geek on top of the super racism.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
I'm a gamer on top of that at a time when playing video games was considered something bad, right? So, from my perspective, hey, I've seen it all. Just relax. Yeah. It's just a game.
But yeah, I mean, that's what I'm talking about here this week. Kind of derailed in a few places, but it's golden age of games. Arcade, yeah. PC, console. When are your golden ages? What would you call the golden age? Comment below and get involved in the conversation. Thanks for watching. See you next time.